The Hunting of the Snark, An Agony in 8 Fits, Lewis Carroll. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of The Hunting of the Snark, An Agony in 8 Fits. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook title, The Hunting of the Snark, An Agony in 8 Fits, author Lewis Carroll, release date, June 25, 2008, ebook 13, most recently updated, July 3, 2025, language, English. Other information and formats, www.gutenberg.org/ebooks/13 credits, David Widger, asterisk start of the project GUTENBERG EBOOK The Hunting of the Snark, An Agony in 8 Fits asterisk, The Hunting of the Snark, An Agony in 8 Fits, by Lewis Carroll, the Millennium Fulcrum Edition 1.2. Inscribed to a dear child, in memory of golden summer hours and whispers of a summer sea, girt with a boyish garb for boyish task. Eager she wields her spade, yet loves as well, rest on a friendly knee intent to ask, the tale he loves to tell, rude spirits of the seething outer strife, unmeet to read her pure and simple sprite, deem, if you list, such hours a waste of life, empty of all delight, chat on, sweet maid, and rescue from annoy, hearts that by wiser talk are unbeguiled. Ah, happy he who owns that tenderest joy, the heart love of a child, away, fond thoughts, and vex my soul no more, work claims my wakeful nights, my busy days, albeit bright memories of that sunlit shore, yet haunt my dreaming gaze. Contents, preface, fit the first the landing, fit the second the bellman's speech, fit the third the baker's tale, fit the fourth the hunting, fit the fifth the beaver's lesson, fit the sixth the barrister's dream, fit the seventh the banker's fate, fit the eighth the vanishing. Preface, if and the thing is wildly possible, the charge of writing nonsense were ever brought against the author of this brief but instructive poem, it would be based, I feel convinced, on the line in P4, then the bowsprit got mixed with the rudder sometimes. In view of this painful possibility, I will not, as I might, appeal indignantly to my other writings as a proof that I am incapable of such a deed. I will not, as I might, point to the strong moral purpose of this poem itself, to the arithmetical principles so cautiously inculcated in it, or to its noble teachings in natural history. I will take the more prosaic course of simply explaining how it happened. The bellman, who is almost morbidly sensitive about appearances, used to have the bowsprit unshipped once or twice a week to be revarnished, and it more than once happened, when the time came for replacing it, that no one on board could remember which end of the ship it belonged to. They knew it was not of the slightest use to appeal to the bellman about it. He would only refer to his naval code and read out in pathetic tones Admiralty instructions, which none of them had ever been able to understand, so it generally ended in its being fastened on anyhow across the rudder. The helmsman used to stand by with tears in his eyes. He knew it was all wrong, but alas, Rule 42 of the code, no, one shall speak to the man at the helm, had been completed by the bellman himself with the words, and the man at the helm shall speak to no one. So, remonstrance was impossible, and no steering could be done till the next, varnishing day. During these bewildering intervals, the ship usually sailed backwards. As this poem is to some extent connected with the lay of the Jabberwock, let me take this opportunity of answering a question that has often been asked me, how to pronounce Slithy Toves. The I in Slithy is long, as in writhe, and Toves is pronounced so as to rhyme with groves. Again, the first O in Borogoves is pronounced like the O in borrow. I have heard people try to give it the sound of the O in worry. Such is human perversity. This also seems a fitting occasion to notice the other hard words in that poem. Humpty Dumpty's theory of two meanings packed into one word like a portmanteau seems to me the right explanation for all. For instance, take the two words fuming and furious. Make up your mind that you will say both words, but leave it unsettled which you will first. Now open your mouth and speak. If your thoughts incline ever so little towards fuming, you will say fuming furious. If they turn by even a hair's breadth towards furious, you will say furious fuming. But if you have the rarest of gifts, a perfectly balanced mind, you will say frumious, supposing that when pistol uttered the well-known words, under which King Bezonian, speak or die. Justice Shallow had felt certain that it was either William or Richard, but had not been able to settle which, so that he could not possibly say either name. Before the other, can it be doubted that, rather than die, he would have gasped, "Out, Rilkium!" "Fit the first, the landing. Just the place for a snark," the bellman cried, as he landed his crew with care, supporting each man on the top of the tide, by a finger entwined in his hair. "Just the place for a snark. I have said it twice, that alone should encourage the crew, just the place for a snark. I have said it thrice, what I tell you three times is true." The crew was complete. It included a boots, a maker of bonnets and hoods, a barrister brought to arrange their disputes, and a broker to value their goods, a billiard marker whose skill was immense, might perhaps have one more than his share, but a banker engaged at enormous expense had the whole of their cash in his care. There was also a beaver that paced on the deck, or would sit making lace in the bow and had often, the bellman said, saved them from wreck, though none of the sailors knew how. There was one who was famed for the number of things. He forgot when he entered the ship, his umbrella, his watch, all his jewels and rings, and the clothes he had bought for the trip. He had 42 boxes, all carefully packed, with his name painted clearly on each, but since he omitted to mention the fact, they were all left behind on the beach. The loss of his clothes hardly mattered because he had 7 coats on when he came, with 3 pairs of boots, but the worst of it was, he had wholly forgotten his name. He would answer to "Hi," or to any loud cry, such as "Fry me," or "Fritter my wig," to "What you may call 'em," or "What was his name," but especially "Thingamajig." While for those who preferred a more forcible word, he had different names from these. His intimate friends called him Candlelands, and his enemies Toasted Cheese. His form is ungainly, his intellect small, so the bellman would often remark, but his courage is perfect. And that, after all, is the thing that one needs with a snark. He would joke with hyenas, returning their stare, with an impudent wag of the head, and he once went a walk poin paw with a bear. "Just to keep up its spirits," he said, he came as a baker, but owned when too late, and it drove the poor bellman half mad. He could only bake bride cake, for which, I may state, no materials were to be had. The last of the crew needs a special remark. Though he looked an incredible dunce, he had just one idea, but that one being snark. The good bellman engaged him at once. He came as a butcher, but gravely declared, when the ship had been sailing a week, he could only kill beavers. The bellman looked scared and was almost too frightened to speak, but at length he explained in a tremulous tone, there was only one beaver on board, and that was a tame one he had of his own, whose death would be deeply deplored. The beaver, who happened to hear the remark, protested with tears in its eyes that not even the rapture of hunting the snark could atone for that dismal surprise. It strongly advised that the butcher should be conveyed in a separate ship, but the bellman declared that would never agree. With the plans he had made for the trip, navigation was always a difficult art, though with only one ship and one bell, and he feared he must really decline, for his part, undertaking another as well. The beaver's best course was, no doubt, to procure a second-hand dagger-proof coat, so the baker advised it, and next, to insure its life in some office of note. This the banker suggested and offered for hire, on moderate terms or for sale, 2 excellent policies, one against fire and one against damage from hail. Yet still, ever after that sorrowful day, whenever the butcher was by, the beaver kept looking the opposite way and appeared unaccountably shy. Fit the second, the bellman's speech, the bellman himself they all praised to the skies. Such a carriage, such ease and such grace, such solemnity too. One could see he was wise. The moment one looked in his face, he had bought a large map representing the sea, without the least vestige of land, and the crew were much pleased when they found it to be a map they could all understand. What's the good of Mercator's north poles and equators, tropics, zones, and meridian lines? So the bellman would cry, and the crew would reply. They are merely conventional signs. Other maps are such shapes with their islands and capes, but we've got our brave captain to thank. So the crew would protest that he's bought us the best, a perfect and absolute blank. This was charming, no doubt, but they shortly found out that the captain they trusted so well had only one notion for crossing the ocean, and that was to tingle his bell. He was thoughtful and grave, but the orders he gave were enough to bewilder a crew. When he cried, "Steer to starboard, but keep her head larboard," what on earth was the helmsman to do? Then the bowsprit got mixed with the rudder sometimes, a thing, as the bellman remarked, that frequently happens in tropical climes, when a vessel is, so to speak, snarked. But the principal failing occurred in the sailing, and the bellman, perplexed and distressed, said he had hoped, at least, when the wind blew due east, that the ship would not travel due west. But the danger was past. They had landed at last, with their boxes, portmanteaus, and bags. Yet at first sight, the crew were not pleased with the view, which consisted of chasms and crags. The bellman perceived that their spirits were low, and repeated in musical tone some jokes he had kept for a season of woe. But the crew would do nothing but groan. He served out some grog with a liberal hand, and bade them sit down on the beach, and they could not but own that their captain looked grand. As he stood and delivered his speech, "Friends, Romans, and countrymen, lend me your ears." They were all of them fond of quotations, so they drank to his health, and they gave him three cheers, while he served out additional rations. "We have sailed many months, we have sailed many weeks. 4 weeks to the month you may mark, but never as yet, tease your captain who speaks, have we caught the least glimpse of a snark. We have sailed many weeks, we have sailed many days. 7 days to the week I allow. But a snark, on the which we might lovingly gaze, we have never beheld till now. Come listen, my men, while I tell you again the five unmistakable marks, by which you may know, wheresoever you go, the warranted genuine snarks. Let us take them in order. The first is the taste, which is meager and hollow, but crisp, like a coat that is rather too tight in the waist, with a flavor of will-o'-the-wisp. Its habit of getting up late, you'll agree, that it carries too far when I say that it frequently breakfasts at 5 o'clock tea and dines on the following day. The third is its slowness in taking a jest. Should you happen to venture on one, it will sigh like a thing that is deeply distressed, and it always looks grave at a pun. The fourth is its fondness for bathing machines, which is constantly carries about, and believes that they add to the beauty of scenes, a sentiment open to doubt. The fifth is ambition. It next will be right to describe each particular batch, distinguishing those that have feathers and bite, and those that have whiskers and scratch. For, although common snarks do no manner of harm, yet I feel it my duty to say, some are boojums. The bellman broke off in alarm, for the baker had fainted away. Fit the third, the baker's tale, they roused him with muffins, they roused him with ice, they roused him with mustard and cress, they roused him with jam and judicious advice. They set him conundrums to guess. When at length he sat up and was able to speak, his sad story he offered to tell, and the bellman cried silence, not even a shriek, and excitedly tingled his bell, there was silence supreme. Not a shriek, not a scream, scarcely even a howl or a groan, as the man they called Ho told his story of woe. In an antediluvian tone, "My father and mother were honest, though poor." "Skip all that," cried the bellman in haste. "If it once becomes dark, there's no chance of a snark. We have hardly a minute to waste." "I skip 40 years," said the baker in tears, "and proceed without further remark to the day when you took me aboard of your ship to help you in hunting the snark. A dear uncle of mine, after whom I was named, remarked when I bade him farewell." "Oh, skip your dear uncle," the bellman exclaimed, as he angrily tingled his bell. "He remarked to me then," said that mildest of men, "if your snark be a snark, that is right. Fetch it home by all means, you may serve it with greens, and it's handy for striking a light. You may seek it with thimbles and seek it with care, you may hunt it with forks and hope, you may threaten its life with a railway share, you may charm it with smiles and soap." "That's exactly the method," the bellman bold, in a hasty parenthesis cried. "That's exactly the way I have always been told, that the capture of snarks should be tried. But oh, beamish nephew, beware of the day, if your snark be a boojum, for then you will softly and suddenly vanish away and never be met with again. It is this that oppresses my soul when I think of my uncle's last words, and my heart is like nothing so much as a bowl, brimming over with quivering curds. It is this, we have had that before," the bellman indignantly said. And the baker replied, "Let me say it once more. It is this that I dread. I engage with the snark every night after dark, in a dreamy delirious fight. I serve it with greens in those shadowy scenes, and I use it for striking a light. But if ever I meet with a boojum that day, in a moment of this I am sure, I shall softly and suddenly vanish away, and the notion I cannot endure." Fit the fourth, the hunting, the bellman looked uffish and wrinkled his brow. "If only you, spoken before, it's excessively awkward to mention it now, with the snark, so to speak, at the door, we should all of us grieve, as you well may believe, if you never were met with again. But surely, my man, when the voyage began, you might have suggested it then. It's excessively awkward to mention it now, as I think I've already remarked." And the man they called Hi replied with a sigh, "I informed you the day we embarked. You may charge me with murder or want of sense. We are all of us weak at times, but the slightest approach to a false pretense was never among my crimes. I said it in Hebrew, I said it in Dutch, I said it in German and Greek, but I wholly forgot, and it vexes me much, that English is what you speak." "'Tis a pitiful tale," said the bellman, whose face had grown longer at every word. but now that you've stated the whole of your case, more debate would be simply absurd. The rest of my speech, he explained to his men, you shall hear when I've leisure to speak it. But the Snark is at hand, let me tell you again. 'Tis your glorious duty to seek it. To seek it with thimbles, to seek it with care, to pursue it with forks and hope, to threaten its life with a railway share, to charm it with smiles and soap. For the Snark's a peculiar creature that won't be caught in a commonplace way. Do all that you know and try all that you don't. Not a chance must be wasted today. For England expects I forbear to proceed. 'Tis a maxim tremendous but trite, and you'd best be unpacking the things that you need to rig yourselves out for the fight. Then the banker endorsed a blank check, which he crossed, and changed his loose silver for notes. The baker with care combed his whiskers and hair and shook the dust out of his coats. The boots and the broker were sharpening a spade, each working the grindstone in turn, but the beaver went on making lace and displayed no interest in the concern, though the barrister tried to appeal to its pride and vainly proceeded to cite a number of cases in which making laces had been proved an infringement of right. The maker of bonnets ferociously planned a novel arrangement of bows, while the billiard marker with quivering hand was chalking the tip of his nose. But the butcher turned nervous and dressed himself fine, with yellow kid gloves and a ruff, said he felt it exactly like going to dine, which the bellman declared was all stuff. Introduce me, now there's a good fellow, he said, if we happen to meet it together. And the bellman, sagaciously nodding his head, said that must depend on the weather. The beaver went simply galumphing about, at seeing the butcher so shy, and even the baker, though stupid and stout, made an effort to wink with one eye. Be a man, said the bellman in wrath as he heard the butcher beginning to sob. Should we meet with a Jubjub, that desperate bird, we shall need all our strength for the job. Fit the fifth, the beaver's lesson. They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care, they pursued it with forks and hope, they threatened its life with a railway share, they charmed it with smiles and soap. Then the butcher contrived an ingenious plan, for making a separate sally and had fixed on a spot unfrequented by man, a dismal and desolate valley. But the very same plan to the beaver occurred. It had chosen the very same place, yet neither betrayed, by a sign or a word, the disgust that appeared in his face. Each thought he was thinking of nothing but Snark and the glorious work of the day, and each tried to pretend that he did not remark that the other was going that way. But the valley grew narrow and narrower still, and the evening got darker and colder, till merely from nervousness, not from goodwill, they marched along shoulder to shoulder. Then a scream, shrill and high, rent the shuddering sky, and they knew that some danger was near. The beaver turned pale to the tip of its tail, and even the butcher felt queer. He thought of his childhood, left far, far behind, that blissful and innocent state, the sound so exactly recalled to his mind, a pencil that squeaks on a slate. 'Tis the voice of the Jubjub, he suddenly cried. This man that they used to call dunce, as the bellman would tell you, he added with pride, I have uttered that sentiment once. 'Tis the note of the Jubjub, keep count, I entreat, you will find I have told it you twice. 'Tis the song of the Jubjub, the proof is complete. If only I've stated it thrice. The beaver had counted with scrupulous care, attending to every word, but it fairly lost heart and outgrabe in despair when the third repetition occurred. It felt that, in spite of all possible pains, it had somehow contrived to lose count, and the only thing now was to rack its poor brains by reckoning up the amount. Two added to one, if that could but be done, it said, with one's fingers and thumbs, recollecting with tears how, in earlier years, it had taken no pains with its sums. The thing can be done, said the butcher. I think the thing must be done, I am sure the thing shall be done. Bring me paper and ink, the best there is time to procure. The beaver brought paper, portfolio, pens, and ink in unfailing supplies, while strange, creepy creatures came out of their dens and watched them with wondering eyes. So engrossed was the butcher, he heeded them not, as he wrote with a pen in each hand and explained all the while in a popular style, which the beaver could well understand. Taking three as the subject to reason, a convenient number to state, we add 7 and 10, and then multiply out by 1,000 diminished by 8. The result we proceed to divide, as you see, by 992, then subtract 17, and the answer must be exactly and perfectly true. The method employed I would gladly explain, while I have it so clear in my head. If I had but the time and you had but the brain, but much yet remains to be said. In one moment I've seen what has hitherto been enveloped in absolute mystery, and without extra charge I will give you at large a lesson in natural history. In his genial way he proceeded to say, forgetting all laws of propriety, and that giving instruction without introduction would have caused quite a thrill in society, as to temper the Jubjub's a desperate bird. Since it lives in perpetual passion, its taste in costume is entirely absurd. It is ages ahead of the fashion, but it knows any friend it has met once before, it never will look at a bribe, and in charity meetings it stands at the door and collects, though it does not subscribe. Its flavor when cooked is more exquisite far than mutton or oysters or eggs. Some think it keeps best in an ivory jar, and some in mahogany kegs. You boil it in sawdust, you salt it in glue, you condense it with locusts and tape, still keeping one principal object in view, to preserve its symmetrical shape. The butcher would gladly have talked till next day, but he felt that the lesson must end, and he wept with delight in attempting to say, he considered the beaver his friend, while the beaver confessed with affectionate looks, more eloquent even than tears, it had learned in 10 minutes far more than all books. Would have taught it in 70 years, they returned hand in hand, and the bellman unmanned. For a moment, with noble emotion, said, "This amply repays all the wearisome days we have spent on the billowy ocean." Such friends as the beaver and butcher became have seldom, if ever, been known in winter or summer. 'Twas always the same. You could never meet either alone, and when quarrels arose, as one frequently finds, quarrels will, spite of every endeavor, the song of the Jubjub recurred to their minds and cemented their friendship forever. Fit the sixth, the barrister's dream. They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care, they pursued it with forks and hope, they threatened its life with a railway share, they charmed it with smiles and soap. But the barrister, weary of proving in vain that the beaver's lace-making was wrong, fell asleep, and in dreams saw the creature quite plain that his fancy had dwelt on so long. He dreamed that he stood in a shadowy court, where the snark, with a glass in its eye, dressed in gown, bands, and wig, was defending a pig on the charge of deserting its sty. The witnesses proved, without error or flaw, that the sty was deserted when found, and the judge kept explaining the state of the law in a soft undercurrent of sound. The indictment had never been clearly expressed, and it seemed that the snark had begun and had spoken 3 hours before anyone guessed what the pig was supposed to have done. The jury had each formed a different view long before the indictment was read, and they all spoke at once so that none of them knew one word that the others had said. "You must know," said the judge, but the snark exclaimed, "Fudge! That statute is obsolete quite. Let me tell you, my friends, the whole question depends on an ancient manorial right. In the matter of treason, the pig would appear to have aided, but scarcely abetted. While the charge of insolvency fails, it is clear, if you grant the plea, never indebted. The fact of desertion I will not dispute, but its guilt, as I trust, is removed. So far as related to the costs of this suit, by the alibi which has been proved, my poor client's fate now depends on your votes." Here the speaker sat down in his place and directed the judge to refer to his notes and briefly to sum up the case. But the judge said he never had summed up before, so the snark undertook it instead, and summed it so well that it came to far more than the witnesses ever had said. When the verdict was called for, the jury declined, as the word was so puzzling to spell, but they ventured to hope that the snark wouldn't mind undertaking that duty as well. So the snark found the verdict, although, as it owned, it was spent with the toils of the day. When it said the word guilty, the jury all groaned, and some of them fainted away. Then the snark pronounced sentence, the judge being quite too nervous to utter a word. When it rose to its feet, there was silence like night, and the fall of a pin might be heard. Transportation for life was the sentence it gave, and then to be fined £40. The jury all cheered, though the judge said he feared that the phrase was not legally sound. But their wild exultation was suddenly checked when the jailer informed them with tears such a sentence would have not the slightest effect, as the pig had been dead for some years. The judge left the court looking deeply disgusted, but the snark, though a little aghast, as the lawyer to whom the defense was entrusted, went bellowing on to the last. Thus the barrister dreamed, while the bellowing seemed to grow every moment more clear, till he woke to the knell of a furious bell, which the bellman rang close at his ear. Fit the seventh, the banker's fate. They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care, they pursued it with forks and hope, they threatened its life with a railway share, they charmed it with smiles and soap. And the banker, inspired with a courage so new, it was matter for general remark, rushed madly ahead and was lost to their view in his zeal to discover the snark. But while he was seeking with thimbles and care, a bandersnatch swiftly drew nigh and grabbed at the banker, who shrieked in despair. For he knew it was useless to fly. He offered large discount, he offered a check, drawn to bearer for £7 10, but the bandersnatch merely extended its neck and grabbed at the banker again, without rest or pause, while those frumious jaws went savagely snapping around. He skipped and he hopped and he floundered and flopped, till fainting he fell to the ground. The Bandersnatch fled as the others appeared, led on by that fear-stricken yell, and the bellman remarked, "It is just as I feared," and solemnly tolled on his bell. He was black in the face, and they scarcely could trace the least likeness to what he had been, while so great was his fright that his waistcoat turned white. A wonderful thing to be seen, to the horror of all who were present that day. He uprose in full evening dress, and with senseless grimaces endeavored to say what his tongue could no longer express. Down he sank in a chair, ran his hands through his hair, and chanted in mimsiest tones words whose utter inanity proved his insanity. While he rattled a couple of bones, "Leave him here to his fate, it is getting so late," the bellman exclaimed in a fright, "We have lost half the day. Any further delay, and we shan't catch a snark before night." Fit the eighth, the vanishing. They sought it with thimbles, they sought it with care, they pursued it with forks and hope, they threatened its life with a railway share, they charmed it with smiles and soap. They shuddered to think that the chase might fail, and the beaver, excited at last, went bounding along on the tip of its tail, for the daylight was nearly past. "There is Thingumbob shouting," the bellman said. "He is shouting like mad, only hark, he is waving his hands, he is wagging his head, he has certainly found a snark." They gazed in delight, while the butcher exclaimed. He was always a desperate wag. They beheld him, their baker, their hero unnamed, on the top of a neighboring crag, erect and sublime for one moment of time. In the next, that wild figure they saw, as if stung by a spasm, plunge into a chasm, while they waited and listened in awe. "It's a snark," was the sound that first came to their ears, and seemed almost too good to be true. Then followed a torrent of laughter and cheers, then the ominous words, "It's a boo." Then silence. Some fancied they heard in the air a weary and wandering sigh, then sounded like jum. But the others declare, it was only a breeze that went by. They hunted till darkness came on, but they found not a button or feather or mark, by which they could tell that they stood on the ground, where the baker had met with the snark. In the midst of the word he was trying to say, in the midst of his laughter and glee, he had softly and suddenly vanished away, for the snark was a boojum, you see, the end. End of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK The Hunting of the Snark. An Agony in 8 Fits asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works. So the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project. Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8, 1B. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See, paragraph 1c below, there are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg. Electronic works. See paragraph 1e below 1c. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1d. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1e. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg, 1e1, the following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1e2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1e1 through 1e7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1e8 or 1e9. 1e3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1e1 through 1e7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1e4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1e5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1e1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1e6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website. www.gutenberg.org. You must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of damages, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second, opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing. Without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1. F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth. In paragraph 1 F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other WRNTIS of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to WRNTIS of MERC Chanti BLATY or fitness for any purpose. 1. F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1. F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone, providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur. A distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, b. alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and c. any defect you cause, section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the State of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN, or Federal Tax Identification, number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax-deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516. Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up. To date contact information can be found at the foundation's website, an official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.